industrial waterways were not meant to be traversed on a vehicle primarily intended for a divorced dad to still seem cool to his kids while getting drunk, you know?
Yeah. Thank you for joining me. This is the 13th episode of Too Long Didn't Listen. And today I'm here with a comedian and, dare I say, professional jet skier, Kurt Braunohler.
It's true.
So when I thought, oh, you know what I want to do? I want to jet ski across the country. People said, that's impossible. Turns out they're right. But then I said, well, what about jet skiing from Chicago to New Orleans? And they said, it's physically doable, but it's incredibly stupid. And I said, let's do it. I jet skied from Chicago to New Orleans.
We got some jumping fish!
To try to raise $50,000 for Heifer International.
Do the people at Heifer International know that this is what you're doing?
So they could provide 500 goats and 1,000 chickens to African families in need and help create a sustainable economy for their communities. And I really thought I could do it!
About roustabout.
Yes.
Now, what does roustabout mean to you, the word?
Roustabout, like, the reason I chose it as the name of this series was in the dictionary, roustabout has a few meanings, but one of them is one with no set vocation slash one who stirs up trouble. And that's kind of the inspiration for roustabout. I know now, like, roustabout used to be like colloquial for guys who put up tents at the circus, and now it currently colloquial.
That's very specific.
Yes, and it now refers to guys who work on oil rigs as well, or roustabouts.
I was thinking, yeah, like a vagrant or something.
Yeah, but that's my roustabout. Like, I always liked it because it's kind of like a 50s term for a hooligan. You know, it's a roustabout coming to town. Hooligan, I feel like, was always too used by teachers. Yeah. You know, like, come on, hooligans. So, like, hooligan to me.
Shenanigans.
Exactly. A lot of hooligans are always doing shenanigans. I feel like roustabouts are maybe a little more dangerous. The first day we ran out of gas and we're just completely without power. And right where we ran out of gas was over a thing called electric fish barrier, which is there's these Asian carp, which are these invasive species in the Illinois River, and they're trying to prevent them from getting into the Great Lakes because if they do, they'll like decimate the Great Lakes. So what they've done is they've just electrified the river. So the river has just wires underneath it that are just coursing with electricity, and that's where we ran out of gas. And so we actually had to have a guy, our PA, like buy gas canisters at a Sears.
I didn't even realize when he was giving you when he had to give you the gas canisters that you guys couldn't even get in the water.
No.
That's what you mean. It's
can't
like literally
touch the water.
Electrified.
It's
water.
Electrified.
My God.
Yeah, it was really crazy. It's I did not expect that.
Yeah. And there were some other things too, like you had a little bit of a rash problem at one point.
Oh, definitely. You should not don't pee in a wetsuit if you're just gonna sit in it for the whole day. That's a terrible idea.
Lesson learned. So would you ever go jet skiing again? After
oh, sure. I mean, I had, once we got south of St. Louis, that's where it really like became beautiful, you know, up until that point, it was really just a horror show. But then after that, it really opens up and it becomes like that very beautiful river you think of as the Mississippi River. And, I remember, you know, cause we had to do like 150, 200 miles a day. And, at a certain point I was in love with jet skiing. Like, I was like, I had to deal with the fact, like, am I going to be a jet ski guy? Like, I didn't know if I was a jet ski guy. Am I going to have to buy a jet ski? It was pretty great. But I honestly don't think I would enjoy it unless I was going long distances in it.
Yeah, you gave me one of my new favorite phrases. If I ever go down the Mississippi, I'm going to use Huck Finning the shit out of it, which was my favorite way that you put it.
Just Huck Finning the
shit out of it. Just Huck Finning the shit out of it. No, that was a really beautiful part. Yeah. So, you know, you did this for charity.
Yeah.
So what was it, 1,000 goats and chickens?
500 goats, 1,000 chickens. So the whole idea being this, we worked with a charity, Heifer International, and they provide livestock. livestock for families in need in Africa. And basically, the idea being behind it, that if we can kind of give one goat and two chickens to a family, that creates kind of a mini economy for that family that's totally renewable. So they can use the goats for milk and butter and cheese and yogurt, and the eggs from the chicken they can sell or eat. And so it kind of creates this, it's a way for them to make money. It's a way for them to feed themselves. It's not just like giving them a gift of here's some grain or something like that. It's more like here's a step up so that you can kind of build a new life for yourself,
right,
which I thought was just very cool. And it just so happens to be that goats and chickens are the funniest animals out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you get some mileage out of the
just the
everyone's
fact that
favorite
it's goat
yelling
and
goat.
Yeah.
Yelling goat is.
Oh, yeah. Fainting goats.
Fainting goats.
They're the best.
What is it about goats? They go up into trees? That
They're
looks crazy.
They're just so dumb. I think that's what it is. You know, like the chickens and goats are both same level dumb. You know, but chickens used to be dinosaurs, so they're probably mad about that. Whereas like goats, they were just always goats, you know? They just don't seem to be like, they like to get on top of things. Like,
yeah.
That's their main desire. Like, how can you not like an animal that just, his main thing is he wants to get on top of it, you know?
Conquer it.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite parts I saw when you meet up with John Daly, who's hilarious, mm-hmm. and I think this is in St. Louis, you stop and do like a lunchtime show.
Yeah.
That just seemed so absurd. Like just that room, that restaurant,
every
that
show
crowd.
Every show we did, except for our opening show and a closing show, was during the day because just we had to, because I had to get back on the river at like 1 p.m.
Night,
and then just jet ski for the rest of the day. And so, so we did a show in St. Louis at like noon. Kyle Kinane and I did a show at 11:30 a.m. To a bar full of bikers in Tennessee. It was the most insane show I've ever done.
Were there like fans, or were you mostly just like?
It was our director in Tennessee. Our director found out that the location where we're doing the show, he's in a bike gang. And so our director, unbeknownst to us, asked the owner if he could bring his bike gang to the show.
Oh my God.
And he was like, yeah, sure. And then like they all showed up. Like they showed up expecting to be, you know, paid in beer. And which we definitely did, because they were very scary. Like one of them had a tattoo of a spider web across all of his face.
Oh my God.
And introduced himself to me by dropping the N-word. It was intense. Like
wow.
They were straight up. And then Kyle Kinane went up there and just took the biggest one of them down, like from stage.
He's like the perfect guy for that.
He's perfect. And it was really awesome.
I can't believe you guys all aren't at work right now, bike gang. We got the gang out. We got Big Bear. We got Earl. We got Glitter Steve over there. We got Sparkle Dave. We got them all out. We got Kissy Lips. Did I get the names right? Or was it wrong on them?
You're close enough.
Is everybody just nervous, or was it not funny?
So what was your favorite spot on the trip, either jet skiing or otherwise?
My favorite spot. I mean, I think that first day, once we get south of St. Louis, it's like an 80-90 mile stretch where finally things start working. Like, you know, because the first day was such a failure. Second half of the day is I had just such a huge rash everywhere. It was very painful and upsetting. And then the latter part of the day, when it was on the Mississippi just going for, you know, 6 hours straight, that was like when it became really beautiful. And there was another time too, we actually had to get off the Mississippi River around Cape Girardeau, and because there was a storm coming up the Mississippi, so we had to go over to the Tennessee River and go down the Tennessee River to the Tom Bigby, to the actual Gulf of Mexico. And there was a section of the Tennessee River that was just sheer cliffs on one side, and I could just ride right next to this like 40-foot tall like limestone cliff with just like pure, just crystal clear water, like no waves. It was really kind of a magical time.
Nice. I've never been on a jet ski.
Yeah, they're not meant for going long distances. That's yeah. not their thing.
You're on like a commercial, basically like a highway on the water.
Yeah, I mean, the joke I used to say in the series is like, industrial waterways were not meant to be traversed on a vehicle primarily intended for a divorced dad to still seem cool to his kids while getting drunk, you know?
Yeah. I always feel like jet skis, that's like something that you win on like The Price is Right.
Yeah.
They're always giving away jet skis.
It's like,
but they don't seem very practical. I don't know many people that could actually like store and then use.
That's what's crazy about it is it's definitely like, it's like hillbilly vacation a little bit, you know, but it's like, they're expensive. Like I looked into buying one. I'm like, who's paying, $8,000 for a jet ski?
That's like a car.
It's crazy.
Used car.
I know you could get a used car for that. But I don't think people buy. My theory is no one buys a new jet ski. Someone like they're just buying them used from other people who've bought them before. Jet ski industry must have a very difficult time.
Craigslist is full of jet skis.
Yeah, it must be.
I would say like if I had to cut back on something, that'd probably be the first thing to go.
First thing to go is the jet ski. I was thinking about it because I really enjoyed using it. I was thinking about like getting one, and then I was just like, well, where am I gonna put it? You have to have somewhere to store it. There's a lot of things you'd need to have a jet ski.
Yeah, like a truck or whatever to tow it. Wow. So what happened in the end? I didn't get to the end of the series. I didn't want to spoil it before I talk to you. But the what happened with the goal with the
The goal was $50,000. By the end of the series, we had only raised $20,000. So it has kind of a bittersweet ending, where it's like this triumph that I made it, but also that I'm $30,000 short of the goal. And we continue raising money after we stop shooting. And we ended up at $35,000, but now we're still trying to, you know, raise money to get it back up to $50,000.
Nice. And do you ever, you know, there was a little bit of a, you know, obviously a little bit of a travelogue sort of atmosphere to the series. Yeah. Would you ever want to do something like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, what I really wanted to do, and if we do it again, I want to just make it as a movie. Because really, we kind of approached cutting this one as if we were cutting a documentary.
Yeah.
And then we kind of broke it up into 9 different pieces for the web. And of course, you had to make it a little, you know, pop a little more here and there because it's such a short format. But what I would really like to do is be able to settle into get more into like the everyday, like kind of like what it's like after I get off the jet ski, kind of more of a documentary feel, I think would be nice for the next thing we do.
So let's talk about stand-up a little bit. Yeah. What are you working on right now?
Well, right now I'm on tour supporting Roustabout. It's the Roustabout tour. All the dates are on ComedyCentral.com. But so right now it's just, I mean, I think for the most part it's, I mean, just like exploring the idea of actually addressing real things, because for so long what makes me laugh is like the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my stand-up is about the dumbest thing, of whatever that is, and now I'm kind of talking about more things that I care about a little bit. I think
more
that's
personal.
It's been more personal for a while. I don't think that's represented yet in, like, my album wasn't that personal, and my half hour was pretty personal, but it's getting more personal, but also like taking on like actual ideas that I want things to change in the world. And that's interesting to see, because that's the kind of a first for me, because it's a mix of like absurd stupidness and then also heartfelt concern for the world.
What are some of your biggest concerns right now?
Right now, in my that I talk about in stand-up, I talk a lot about Eric Garner, talk a lot about the difference between being white and black in America. And that's literally, like, right now it's just a 10-minute section of my set, you know? But I would like to expand on it. Been talking about religion a little bit as well, you know. I think it's kind of like the normal. I think when you're on tour, on January, I did 25 shows in 28 days. And I think when you're on tour like that, you get really sick of yourself. You know, it's good. You easily get like done with everything you've ever thought of and talked about, you know, because you're just saying these same things over and over again. And you kind of realize, like, if I'm going to be up here and doing this and talking, making these people listen to me, I should really be doing it for a reason, other than just to make them laugh. Once you get over, like, okay, I can make you laugh, now it's like, well, then why am I making you laugh? I think that's the next big step. Why?
Yeah.
You know?
And I know, I think Larry Wilmore had some, had, you know, some material on this, but like, had there been any of your other like comedy peers that you, that have been doing similar stuff that you were like, yes, that's exactly what I'm like going for?
I mean, it's always Doug Stanhope.
Oh, right.
Always,
yeah.
Doug Stanhope. Doug Stanhope's the, I think, the one who changed the way I think about stand-up, really.
Yeah.
About what it can be. He's so amazing. His last album, have you seen Beer Hall Putsch?
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's like a thing of pure beauty. It's essentially three jokes, you know, it's like three things in an hour, and each one is mind-blowing.
Yeah, he does a good job of making it seem very off the cuff, and hitting you with these like really poignant jokes that you're like, whoa, yeah. I wasn't even ready for that.
Doug Stanhope's one, and then Stuart Lee, too. Have you ever seen any Stuart Lee?
No, I
haven't. He's from the UK. He kind of created the... He helped kind of foster the quote-unquote alternative comedy scene in London in like the late 80s, early 90s. And that guy is on point. He's incredibly smart. His bits have like 13, 14 levels. They're crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So have you, Hot Tub, wonderful show with you and Kristen Schaal.
Thank you.
I know you guys don't do it as regularly anymore.
Every Monday.
You still do it every Monday?
Every Monday. We've been doing it every Monday
York,
for
so
10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's great. So you guys are still sticking with it.
Oh, yeah. It's every Monday in L.A.
For some reason, I thought that it had dropped off.
Nope. Not at all.
Well,
every single Monday.
I was misinformed.
8 p.m. at the Virgil in Santa Monica, on Santa Monica and Virgil in L.A.
And you did some voices on Bob's Burgers, too, right?
I've done a lot of voices on Bob's Burgers. I have one recurring character. Who's named Logan. He's a skate punk that steals Louise's ears in one episode. And then I've just done a whole bunch of voices here and there for them.
Yeah.
It's really fun show to work on.
Yeah, they're all so talented.
They're the best. And also Lauren runs the room in such a cool way where everybody's in the same room together so everybody can improvise. And I think it really comes across when you watch the show that a lot of stuff's improvised.
Yeah, I feel that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely like, especially when Eugene and Kristen are talking, it just really feels like improv and like little things that kind of come out, like little comments that you would never think to, you know, to write in, but they just seem so natural. Logan's a great character too. I mean, what a great, like, you know, the bully that can stand up to the other bully in the family.
Yeah.
So good. When you were a kid, were you like really funny or when did you start getting into stand-up?
I mean, I didn't get into stand-up until I was 30 years old. That's when I started doing stand-up. So very much a late bloomer. Started doing comedy when I was 22. But before then was really not, didn't ever think, like I always liked funny things and liked, you know, being funny, but didn't ever think of it as a possible career at all.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to New York, started improvising because the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater had just opened on the original location, 21st Street. And took one of their first classes that was held in the theater.
The old strip club.
Yeah, the old strip club. Yeah.
I remember that.
Guys would walk in. For the whole time it was there, guys would come in who just had been away from New York for a while, but were like, they would just walk in at like 8 a.m. because our classes were so early. They were always at 8, 9 a.m. And these guys would walk in drunk at 9 a.m. expecting it to still be a strip club. And I have to like turn them away.
I love the idea. I would love to see like guys like that coming in and actually sitting down and like paying to see a show. And it's like Amy Poehler comes on stage and he's like waiting for her to take her clothes off. And she's just like blowing his mind with hilarity.
I think the stage was still in the same place though. I mean, like that's what's kind of crazy about it too. Yeah, that was a crazy, great little theater.
Yeah, so good. We're getting the wrap it up signal. Rouseabout's on ComedyCentral.com.
Yes.
And
also on YouTube, so you can watch it on YouTube or CC.com.
Yeah, you can avoid the... Avoid the man and just watch it on the people's channel YouTube. Awesome. So what's like, give me just to, you know, end on something related to that. What was like the one thing that you took away from the trip that you feel like was the most important lesson?
Oh, Jesus. You know, if you're gonna jet ski that far, like, have a lot of lotion for your crotch. Like, that's, don't forget the lotion, because you're gonna need it.
That's great advice.
I think it's great advice for life in general.
And sunscreen too, right? I imagine that was a problem.
Yeah, but lotion more important.
More important.
Yeah, for the underwear areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lotion for the
bathing suit area.
Yeah, I was gonna say taint, but I guess that's
taint lotion.
Taint lotion.
Don't forget the taint lotion.
That's a great place to end. Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you.